The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you're joining us on this Thursday afternoon. Have a lot of news, once again, to dissect, to go through with you, and we're really busy with the news. So let's get right to it. Let's get to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Sources have told The Dory Monson Show about a crime that was committed yesterday that illustrates just the complete breakdown of any mental health care in this state. As you know, under Jay Inslee, Western State Hospital was decertified. He let it go into such disrepair. We've had guys like Alexander Jay roaming the streets, grabbed a woman and threw her down three flights of stairs at a downtown Sound Transit station. A judge said he was mentally ill, said that he had to get treatment. There was no room for treatment. So Alexander Jay sat in jail, and a judge, bizarrely, sickly, a judge says, we, the taxpayers, have to pay Alexander Jay $250 a day because he didn't get into mental health. This is a guy who threw a woman down three flights of stairs, stabbed another woman the same day 10 times. Allegedly. He hasn't been tried for those yet, but it's on video, okay? So we let a mentally ill guy not only run loose, but then once he's caught, you and I, the taxpayers, it's up to $10,000 that this guy is going to get from us. There are a lot of people who work a good, solid 8-hour day who don't make $250 a day. But a violent, mentally ill criminal is making over $31 an hour by sitting in jail because our mental health care system is in such disrepair. And I thought about that when we got tipped off. Everybody else is going to find out about this at 2:30 this afternoon. But a source has told us about a murder that happened in Shoreline yesterday. And in this murder, a 29-year-old man killed his mother. King County Sheriff's Office went to this condo in Shoreline for a welfare check because the mother had a restraining order against her son, but then she ended up letting the son live with her. They go for a welfare check and they find that a 29-year-old, the son, killed his mother. Beheaded her, tortured her. He cut her ears off and put her head in the freezer. Now, this is somebody the system knew about because the mother did get the restraining order. Now, the mother obviously let him in after the restraining order was obtained, which was a tragic and fatal mistake. But when you hear about crimes like this happening in our region, and so many people, their brains have just been destroyed with drugs. I mean, this is a culmination of legalizing drugs, these sick politicians and prosecutors and Supreme Court justices who have legalized drugs in this region. And we're seeing more and more mental illness come out of that. And then you have Jay Inslee, who couldn't run a two-car funeral, certainly cannot run a mental health care system. And our health care system's in complete disarray. It's a disaster in our state. And we have more and more people like this roaming the streets, the Alexander Jays of the world. Now, I will tell you, the King County Sheriff's Office cannot confirm the details of what I just told you. The appearance in court is 2:30 this afternoon, but it is a very good and trusted source that has told us about this horrible crime in Shoreline. But it's just another example of how the combination of drugs and mental illness and politicians who do not care about the havoc the tragedy that they unleash on our society, it is unforgivable. And it is also very closely connected to the next story in our big lead.
The big lead, top story.
I have spent the vast majority of my personal life, my off-air time, coaching and working with kids. And yeah, I told you last weekend, my wife and I and all three of our daughters, we all went to Pullman for a wedding of one of the girls that I coached, and our daughter was a bridesmaid. But this girl is one of three that I got to coach from kindergarten through senior year of high school. And because right when they got to high school, the high school job opened up. And so I kept coaching this group of kids. And at this wedding, 10 years later, 10 years after high school, there were five girls from that basketball team there. And they are just wonderful, lovely, accomplished young women. And I'm so thrilled to have them as a part of my life. I'm absolutely heartbroken by these stats that are in the Seattle Times today about youth suicide and understanding just how lost so many kids are today. Because, you know, the reason, you know, people participate in any extracurriculars, you know, whether it be drama, I mean, it's an adult leader, drama or band or sports or anything that helps connect kids and help kids feel connected. The reason we do that is because we want to have a positive impact in their lives. And when you see these numbers, especially among our girls, it is a crisis. And if you've been listening to this show, you know that it's something that Brock Heward and I have been talking about for much of the last 2.5 years, and that is the crisis in mental health as kids for much of those 2.5 years were shut down socially in every way. They retreated into an online world that is just so sick and cruel and destroying. So here are the stats in the Seattle Times. Self-harm and suspected suicide cases here in Washington. And it's worse here in Washington than most places in the country. I'm certain why that is. I'll get into that in just a moment. If you listen to my show a lot, you probably know what I'm about to say. But among 6 to 12-year-olds in Washington between 2019 and 2021, among 6 to 12-year-olds, the number of cases of self-harm and suspected suicide has increased 58%. And the numbers are just dramatic when you look at, you know, the raw data as well. It's gone from among girls, it's increased almost 50% from 1,500 cases of suspected suicide to 2,300 in 2021. Among 13 to 17 year olds, attempted suicides up 37%. Why is this? Okay, we called this. We said before the numbers ever came out that we were anecdotally hearing all of this. And, you know, some people said, no, you want to decry the lockdown, which is so important for the kids' physical health. We destroyed a lot of kids emotionally and mentally over the last 2.5 years. And the more isolated kids become, especially girls, girls are incredibly social. And the more they retreated into an online world, which again is filled with tearing people down and cruelty in so many instances, it's been devastating for an awful lot of kids. They lost that connectiveness that playing sports or doing an after-school play or participating in band provided them. They lost all of that. And you've heard me say consistently that I think history will judge what we've done to children in the last 2.5 years to be one of the greatest moral crimes of our lifetime. I've been saying that for much of the last 2.5 years. Now we have stats that seem to support that. Okay, why is it worse in Washington than in most places? It's because even under the best of times, even when there's no lockdown and stay at home and mask mandates, we are the most disconnected, socially disconnected region in the country. Why is that? In the history of mankind, there have been two gathering places for families, for communities, school and church. That is what bonds people in a society. That's what has always bonded people. In Seattle, we are the most unchurched city in the United States of America. Few people have any religious affiliation in Seattle than anywhere else in the country. And we are a childless city compared to other cities. We're number one or number two in fewest children. San Francisco and Seattle always battling for the low spot in fewest children. And our schools have become a disaster. The schools have become a place where kids are taught that they should dislike their classmates, maybe even hate their classmates based on skin color. With the critical race theory, racist nonsense that's taught in the schools, with adults pushing their agendas in the schools. And it's destroying our kids. You may have heard in Aaron's newscast at the top of the hour. Last night, the Kent School Board voted to keep a book in the middle school library called Jack of Hearts. Jack of Hearts is a book about a gay kid having a relationship with an adult male. Now, nobody has a problem with this book because it is an LGBTQ story. In fact, to the contrary, I think that gay kids, they need to have books that represent their life every bit as much as any other kid in school. What is so despicable about this book, and again, it was affirmed by the Kent School Board last night for the middle schools. It is graphically pornographic in much of the book, and it describes behavior that if this was a book about a cis relationship, it would be horrifying. But here's one passage, and I'm going to tie this back to the mental health of our kids. One passage in this book, Jack of Hearts, and it's the youth who is describing a sex act with an adult male. So he bends me over the bed and drizzles some lube on my bleep. I made him wear a condom, of course. And then it describes an act. They can say it in middle schools. I guess I can say it on the radio. That describes anal sex. And the author, the youth who's in the books writes, "And wow, that hurts. I tell him to stop. It hurts." And he says he'll go slower. So Kent School Board, is that what's acceptable? I thought no meant no for kids. Does that only apply to girls, but not to gay kids? What in the world did it become acceptable for somebody to tell their partner to stop, and the partner just says, "No, I'll just go slower"? When did that become acceptable? This doesn't have any redeeming value in a middle school. It has nothing to do with the fact that it's an LGBTQ book. It has to do with the fact that it's sending a message, apparently to gay kids, that it's a different rule book for you than for the other kids. If the girls tell someone to stop, they're supposed to stop. If the boys tell someone to stop, they just go slower. I mean, what kind of sick depravity is this? And it doesn't have any redeeming value. So why are books like this in the middle school? Because we have adults with an agenda. And in this case, it's clearly a grooming agenda. Adults who use kids for their agenda, they convince kids that even though statistically schools are very safe places, they've convinced children that they are going to be gunned down and murdered at school because the adults have a gun control agenda. They push, they have kids believe that they're going to drown in 10 years and are taking pledges to not have children themselves when they become adults because we're going to be covered with 10 feet of water. Because the adults have a climate change agenda. And having adults impose their agenda and using children as pawns, telling gay kids that no doesn't mean no. We got some sick perverse, and nobody's willing to call it out directly, but I'm furious at looking at these teen suicide stats. It's heartbreaking. It is a moral failing. We don't have any place for kids to connect, so we just got adults using them for adult purposes. It is sick, it is wrong, and it is the greatest moral tragedy of our lifetime. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We have a lot more to do as we run through the afternoon. Some of the homeless are disappearing from the streets of Seattle. But guess where they're popping up? This, too, is hell on earth and another reflection of the absolute failure of our politicians around here. I'll talk with journalist Jonathan Cho about what he's discovered. It's pretty amazing stuff. And if you care about the environment, you will be about to find out that how little our politicians care about the planet. That's coming up next, right after we check the news here on the Dory Monson Show. You may have noticed that there are a few less homeless people on the streets of Seattle and in our urban areas. Bruce Harrell's doing more sweeps than his predecessor, but they're not going into rehab and they're not going to jail. So where are all these homeless people going? It's creating a bit of an environmental crisis, and I just still think a human crisis. Jonathan Cho, our buddy, he is a senior fellow and journalist at the Discovery Institute. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Jonathan, always good to talk to you.
Hey, Dory, how you doing, man?
Fantastic. So you've been working on this story for about a month. Tell my listeners what you are discovering.
Yeah, well, it started off with that question, right, Dory? Where are all the homeless going from Seattle? Well, in fairness, some are taking the shelter referrals and services that these outreach groups are offering after these encampment clearings on the highways now and a lot of these public ways in Seattle. But many are now also retreating into heavily wooded areas. And that's why I launched this two-part series just this week called Hidden Crisis in the Woods. And it's been absolutely eye-opening. There are encampment communities in multiple wooded areas in Seattle, in King County, and in unincorporated King County. And it is really causing unintended consequences, not only for the neighbors and business owners who live around these wooded areas, but the environmental impact, just trash, needles, drug use, essentially all the problems that are associated with a lot of these homeless encampments in the city. They're now in these wooded areas. And on top of that, the conditions the homeless people are now living in these places, absolutely outrageous and unacceptable, in my opinion.
Okay, let's break this down. You talked about the impact on neighbors and businesses. I'll get to the environmental aspect of it in just a moment. I always assume that the reason the homeless tend to gather in urban areas is because many of them have to commit daily crimes so that they can buy drugs to feed their habit. So is that what we're seeing with these surrounding businesses and homes that are adjacent to these wooded areas?
Yeah, there's no doubt, and it's been confirmed by the King County Sheriff's Office. A lot of these wooded areas have turned into chop shops, stolen bikes, stolen cars, just being, you know, chopped up and sold for parts, also for who knows what else. And again, a lot of these associated problems, the drug use, the criminal activity, the fires while the home is trying to stay warm, you know, they're causing fires in these forests. Spoke to Puget Sound Regional Fire. And on top of going there for these fires, they're dealing with emergencies like ODs. And it's so difficult. You got to consider this. This is the biggest difference, Dory. Going into these wooded areas, it is tough terrain. It's essentially like hiking. You and I have both been hiking. We have to put on our boots. It's muddy. And you have these firefighters, first responders going up there regularly now. That's causing a whole mess of different types of problems.
Are the drug dealers going there? Drug dealers have to be where the customers are. And they've been all over Seattle and our urban areas. Are the drug dealers going to them in the woods, too?
Oh, absolutely. Of course that's happening, Dory. That goes without question. Again, these wooded areas, they're off the beaten path. But there are roadways there. And, you know, the drug dealers will find customers everywhere. And the customers will find the drugs when they really need it. And a lot of the users, the dealers, they know how lax the policies are here in Washington State and in this region. And it's really, again, causing this vicious cycle now in these wooded areas, problems that aren't just in the city anymore.
Let's talk about the environmental part now. So you started to talk about the needles and just the conditions, but what conditions are they living in and what is it doing to these pristine areas?
Well, let's use the White Center Pond in White Center as a perfect example. A neighbor was just walking this beautiful trail. It's a protected wetland. And he started to see breaks in the fence. And he explored and went in there. And you can see this in my video that I have up online right now. And you have homeless people literally building huts with thatched roofs, straight up cutting down trees in some instances, you know, trash everywhere, tents. And these are protected areas. And I reached out to the King County Department of Natural Resources and Parks, and I asked them, what are you going to do about it? And they're basically saying right now, they don't have the protocols, essentially the green light to go in there and clean this stuff up. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this story, but what I've learned through my reporting is that in King County, they're still operating under COVID-19 protocols. That means they're being advised the workers not to go in there. And obviously that doesn't apply in Seattle. These clearings are happening. So again, King County seems to be behind the ball right now. It's really impacting policy and the response right now. And I asked the Department of Natural Resources again, so are you guys tracking, at the very least tracking, the environmental damage, the potential environmental damage? And the answer straight up was no.
Well, you know what's crazy about this is Dow Constein, just a couple of weeks ago, didn't he announce that he wants a big tax hike to acquire some open land space in King County? He wants to add to the amount of undeveloped land that we have in King County. And if all of this land is taken over by homeless people and are trashing it to this extent, then that's going to be a pretty tough sell for the voters, I would say.
Yeah, and that's the piece that Executive Dow Constein, at least right now publicly, isn't talking about. Of course, I reached out to him as well to get his thoughts on what's happening here. Right now, the only public official really who's trying to do anything about this is King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn, who's also running for Congress as a Republican in the 8th District. And basically, just this week, Dunn invited a handful of media members, myself included, as well as Cairo FM, Hannah Scott, who I saw out in the field. He took us there firsthand and essentially wanted the media to see what's going on. And it was an absolute disaster. Of course, I had been in there before by myself on my own investigating all of this. And Reagan Dunn essentially introduced a new proposal, a pilot program legislation that would essentially empower workers to finally go inside, connect these people with housing, and in some cases, force these people to finally take the services and housing. But again, Councilmember Dunn saying he's getting pushback. He introduced similar legislation last year, and King County Council members Joe McDermott and Gurmais Aili opposed it. And I reached out to them as well and asked them, hey, do you have any better solutions, any better ideas? Why are you opposing Council members Dunn's legislation? And they didn't get back to me for the story, and Dow Constein did not either.
Yeah, what a shock. Just a few months ago, I think you covered the story, Jonathan. City of Seattle acquired that piece of property in Lake City that was creekside, and they wanted to restore the creek, and they wanted to make it an urban, you know, little pocket park. And the homeless took that over and were trashing it and were pouring, you know, human waste and needles and all kinds of stuff into this creek on a property that was acquired, supposedly, to enhance our green space around here. And to take all of this and to allow this to happen, just because it's hidden, doesn't mean that it's not still a very serious problem.
Absolutely. I did cover that. I broke that story of the Thornton Creek watershed, Lake City's Little Red House. Deb Juarez's district never got back to me either. Pretty much neighbors sounding the alarm, saying this is, again, totally turning into an environmental disaster. Again, the city can acquire all the land that they want, but if they don't start enforcing, right, the laws on the books and actually stopping these homeless folks from setting up shop and taking over these areas, this is going to continue this vicious cycle. And again, while no doubt Mayor Bruce Harrell is making progress with his encampment clearings, the question is, what happens to all these folks who aren't taking services, who aren't taking shelter? Again, right, heading into the woods, heading into these environmentally protected areas. And right now, there is no clear solution. Still waiting for the mayor's office to get back to me on this.
Well, all these politicians pretend to care about the environment, and then they pretend to care about humanity and the conditions the homeless live in. It's hellish. It is my vision of hell on earth, and it's worse than third world nations. And the fact that this is tolerated on an environmental level, on a human level, on a legal level, it is still a shock and a shame for our region. I appreciate all the work you do on this, Jonathan.
Yeah, no, Dorian, let me mention one more piece here in closing. One of the sheriff's deputies, Stephen Johnson, who really covers unincorporated King County, he said it best. He goes, this isn't just about, you know, clearing the trash from these wooded areas. We've got to remember these homeless, they're people. He knows so many of them by name. And he just said, it is sad. It is heartbreaking. And he said, this is not compassion. But he couldn't get into why, again, the policymakers would not give him the authority to go in and enforce, at the very least, show some love and get in there and help these people out.
Where do people go if they want to see your work on this?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Again, my primary platforms now at the Discovery Institute. The website is fixhomelessness.org. You can see a lot of my work there. But of course, my primary as well is now on social media, Twitter, at Choesho, C-H-O-E-S-H-O-W.
Got it. All right. Well, good work, Jonathan. I appreciate you popping on with me today.
All right. Thanks again, Dory, for all your support.
Jonathan Cho, senior fellow and journalist at the Discovery Institute. Go check out his work. He's doing great stuff. Love to hear your thoughts on all of this. You can text me, 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Getting lots of your text messages to our opening segment today about the dramatic rise in youth suicide attempts, and it's worse in Washington than most places in the country. One person, Sug, writes, "Story: the children's mental health is so bad here because of the same reason why we have so many serial killers. Nobody wants to get involved. We're too polite here. People don't pry, don't ask questions, and allow people to do their own thing." I will say that children thrive on having boundaries. That has always been necessary to, and, you know, great parents know this, that you can't just let your kids run amok. And kids love having boundaries. And, you know, I saw one of those drag queens who goes into the schools. I have audio. I'll play you the audio a little bit later today. But it's a drag queen saying that the reason they're putting drag queens into the schools is to teach the kids that there are no boundaries. That's a horrible message for kids, that there are no boundaries. Kids can thrive and be limitless in their achievements. But you do have to have some boundaries when we are growing up. And that's becoming an increasingly unpopular thing to say. But being right sometimes is unpopular. Believe me, I've learned that. I've learned that over the years. But yes, we need to have some bumpers, for the side bumpers. You know, the kind they put in the bowling alley gutters. You know, it's incorrect to call them gutters anymore. Did you know that? It's called a channel now on the sides of bowling alleys.
So they're channel guards now, not gutter guards.
Yeah, channel guards. Because gutters sounds like something that homeless people are in. So you can't say gutters anymore. Didn't know if you knew that, but I want all the bowlers in my audience to be as politically correct as possible. But yes, so I am getting an awful lot of feedback on our opening comments, and a lot of people have such hatred, apparently, for kids' mental health, because they say, it doesn't matter. We got to get the message of gun control and climate change to the kids. Now, let the kids be kids and have the intellectual courage to debate adult issues with adults. Stop using kids as pawns. That's all I'm saying. That we're supposed to bring and create and help infuse joy into the lives of children. And there are too many people who want to just use kids. And, you know, I'll tell you something else. I've seen that a lot in the field that I was talking about, in youth sports, where there are coaches who are emotionally abusive to kids. And one time, it's the only time I've ever done this, but my team, when they were young, before I was high school, they were playing a tournament down in Kent. And the coach on the other team was the most emotionally abusive man I'd ever heard coaching girls' sports. And their team beat our team, but man, he was berating his girls. He was screaming at them in the parking lot after the game because they only beat us by 6 points. And I walked back in the gym. The parents were still waiting for the post-game talk to end. I went back in the gym. And I've never done this, but I went up to the opposing team's parents and I said, "You guys, I'm sorry. You should all be ashamed of yourselves letting a grown man talk to your daughters." And it wasn't because I was bitter because the other coach beat me. It's because I have always been very defensive about the emotional health and well-being of kids. And I told the parents they should be ashamed of themselves, and a couple got really ticked off at me, and two of them called me the next day to ask if I had a spot on my team for their daughters, which I did not because their daughters lived in the deep South End, and my team was full at the time. But, yeah, parents allowing that, it's that too is shameful. But it's a combination of all of those things. And like I said, when you don't have any community gathering places like schools or churches anymore, then you don't have anybody with common missions. And that's how we elevate everybody. That's how we elevate ourselves as adults. That's how we elevate our children, is we have some common purpose, some goals that can be set. And then if you work together and individuals lift up the group and the group bolsters the individual, that's how you thrive. That's how children thrive. And the exact opposite is happening in our schools right now, where they're teaching kids to either that they're either bullies or they're victims just based on their skin color. They should either hate or be hated just on their skin color. So anyway, tons of feedback, and I wasn't going to come back to it, but I'm getting an incredible amount of comments on our opening segment today. If you missed it, you can check out the podcast after we get off the air. Okay, we're going to check the news for you. There's some breaking news going on. You've heard about this barrel in the roadway that shut down light rail in Seattle. We'll cover that for you next, and then the fastest 15 here on the Dory Monson Show.